Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Okay, we've started talking about introducing the story. Sananda speaking, Sanandana, to the sages on Tapoloka. We have our homework to discuss. So, did anybody do any research? Dominic, could you run and get, there's a piece of paper on my desk, it has some verse numbers on it. Yeah. Yes, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yes. There's supposed to be Adi Lila chapter 5, supposedly.
But I didn't find any specific on Mahavishnu.
Okay, that there's no doubt about. That he's an expansion, that Mahavishnu is an expansion of Sankarsana.
Yeah.
But this thing about, idea about him periodically going back into, maybe that isn't there.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Now about Avyakta, about Pradhan merging into Vishnu, we did discover some things. In the 11th canto, 24th chapter, it says that Avyakta, which is Pradhan, merges into Kala, and that merges into Jiva, but Jiva means the Supreme Lord. And there are similar statements elsewhere about the annihilation. Avyakta also merges back into the more subtle. Time is there, and then the Lord himself is there. But in the 12th canto, 4th chapter, it is stated, Pradhan is Avyakta, and it is Nitya and Ananta, unlimited and eternal. So you have two different facts. The Pradhan is never destroyed, it's never dissolved and go out of existence and just dissolve into something it came from, but it does merge. So I think it's like the living entities when they go into the body of Mahavishnu during the period of annihilation. They're not dissolved, they're still living entities. They come out again, still intact. Like that, Pradhan, although it's eternal, sits inside the Supreme Lord during the period of annihilation. Then the other thing was a statement by Jiva Goswami going out of the way to say that the Lord that's being offered these prayers by the personified Vedas is not the Purusha, but Bhagavan. That's confirmed later on in the prayers of personified Vedas in verses 50 to 52 where the Shrutis call him Mahakala. They identify him as Mahakala and Vishwanath Chakravarti in his Tika identifies Mahakala as the Mahavaikunthanath, the Lord of Vaikuntha. Still, what is the Lord of Vaikuntha doing there? Where are they? Where is this happening? Is it in the causal ocean or is it back in Vaikuntha? And what happened to Mahavishnu and how did he turn into Vaikunthanath? That's still unanswered. Yes, you want to make a comment?
Maybe still we can understand that he assumes the role of Lord of Vaikuntha although externally he is in the form of Mahavishnu, but see, he's in the mood of Lord Narayana, and therefore Veda, they offer him prayer in this way.
Yes. Or simply that, you know, that's a little complicated about being in the mood, because you know, how can we guess what mood he's in? Maybe simply the expansion is being identified with the Lord he expands from. You know, he's not literally Narayan, but because he's immediately the expansion of Narayan, we're calling him Narayan. He is Narayan, Narayan in his expansion form. I'm sorry, can I ask, what's the name of that devotee who comes every day into class from outside? Charu Krishna, okay. He's the one who found these references. Thank you. Any other discussion about these questions?
That means you said that the universal shell are going back into Mahavishnu.
I was questioning, does that really happen? Is there even a description of that happening? Because I said, like, when a person perspires, you breathe out, you breathe back in again. But when you perspire, you don't usually perspire back in again.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think there is a... Charu Krishna says that he saw in the Brahma Samhita some statement that they do go back into him, the shells. But then when I asked him, he couldn't remember where it was, and he's not sure. So we have to look further into the Brahma Samhita to see if there actually is a statement saying that. That they do go back, I don't know. I don't think there is a statement, but I'm not sure, that the shells go back into Mahavishnu, mm-hmm. The empty shells of the universe. Mm.
But what goes back then, how?
Well, the jivas go into Vishnu during the time of annihilation. What came out in his glands, see, there's what comes out of his pores of his body, there's also what comes out of his glands. The jivas, time, and the karma and swabhava of the jivas are contained in his glands. And also, Lord Shiva and his consort are contained, are the penumbra, the halo of that glands. That's the contents of the glands. So those contents go back into him at the time of annihilation when there's no universe.
So then the universe...
But the shells may just dissolve, you know, into the material elements.
And then that becomes Prakriti, correct? Like, that goes into Prakriti, like...
I think so, but that's just my guess. Okay. I don't know of a scriptural definite statement about that.
And then the Prakriti goes back into Mahavishnu.
Well, that we... Yeah, actually, that's what we're just reading about here. 11:24. And it said elsewhere that Pradhan, or Avyakta, merges into Kala, and Kala merges back into the Lord.
Okay.
So even if the universal shells dissolve into Prakriti, into Pradhan, she's going to merge into, not actually merge. See, there's two different ideas of merging. One is to dissolve and not exist as a separate entity anymore. Like the atoms just disintegrate and go back into primeval energy. But if the atoms are just put into a container, sucked up into, you know, a container, they're still intact. That's a different kind of merging. You know, you soak up the water in a sponge, it's still water. So we got to distinguish between the two kinds of merging. Sarvagya.
I was also looking yesterday and I found something, but I couldn't actually understand what's going on. Like, it's a whole description of the creation. So it said that, like, we have Karana ocean, it's from Chaitanya Charitamrita also, fifth chapter, description of Mahavishnu. So we have Karana ocean, and on the Karana ocean, Mahavishnu lies down. Then he glances to Maya, which is outside of Karana ocean. They said that it cannot touch the waters of Karana ocean. So then, he gives glance and thus he impregnates her with the seeds of life in the form of the living entities.
Yes.
Then it says something interesting. The reflected rays of his body mix with Maya, and thus Maya gives birth to myriad universes. And then, the more emotions in this.
Okay,
so
can you
trace
that through again?
The reflected rays of his body mix with Maya, and thus Maya gives birth to myriad universes. Millions of universes.
Yes.
Yeah. And then it is said, the Purusha enters each and every one of the countless universes. He manifests himself in as many separate forms as there are universes.
Oh, okay.
And then when Purusha excels, the universes are manifested with each outward breath.
Yes.
And then it is said, when he inhales, all the universes again enter his body. So it looks like very difficult because he's in the Karna ocean, then Maya is outside, then his rays gives birth to the universes which are outside of him, and then when he excels, universes...
Wait, what gives birth? What was the word you now used? Is what?
Gives birth to millions of universes.
No, what is the subject? What gives birth? The rays of his body.
The rays of his body.
Where is this description from?
It's Adilila, 5th chapter, 66th verse.
Could you write this down on this piece of paper, that number? I don't know how that... Okay, we see we got... Already from Brahma Samhita, we have two different things. We have what's sent into Prakriti by the glands. And in the same Brahma Samhita, we've got the shells of the universe is coming out of his hair follicles on his body. And now you're talking about light shining off his body and everything being created from that. That seems to be a whole different description. Right? So we have to compare this. And also, aren't you Leela chapter 5? It's almost certain that Anchalila chapter 5 is quoting from some other from Shastra by the either Brahma Samhita or one of the Goswami's books. Can you find out what's being quoted?
He's quoting Brahma Samhita. This is 548 about Mahavishnu, about the universe is coming out.
Could you put in parentheses next to that verse number? Parentheses 548 so I can look into that. So this is coming from, this is Chaitanya Charitamrita getting its information from Brahma Samhita. So the Brahma Samhita is giving us three different pictures then. From the glands, from the sweating, and now from the shining of his body, creation is going on. Okay, so we have to reconcile all three. Got me. Okay.
When I was reading
but,
this...
But Prakriti, the universe is going back into him.
Prakriti is going back into him.
Now, it could be that first they go back, everything goes back into her, and then she goes back with everything material, into him. Both things can be happening. So it's true that the universe is merged into Prakriti, and they also merge into Mahavishnu, because Prakriti merges into Mahavishnu. Could be like that.
But if you have this graphic description that universe is coming out of the pores of the body and then they go out and then go in, it's like more graphical, but it might not be true.
There?
He's given one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which directly describes it a little bit further.
Is that also 548?
No, it's from Srimad Bhagavatam.
Oh,
it's,
but where is it being quoted?
Yeah, it's kvanam tamo mahataham kva kcharagni vatpu. So it's from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.11.
Okay, 10.14.11 from his prayers.
From Brahma. Yeah, it is said that unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body just like the particles of dust passing through the opening of a window.
Yes. Now, Where is that being quoted? In CC?
In Chaitanya Charitamrita. Just a bit further. So first, Krishna Kaviraj gave
his... Could you find the actual verse where it's being quoted?
Yeah, yeah.
And write that down?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Write down the number and write in parentheses 1014, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. The verse number from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then in parentheses the verse number from the Bhagavatam 1014, where that's being cited. Okay, we're going to have to match up all these references and make them fit together. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why don't we continue? Oh, do we have anything else on this? Any other research finds?
Yeah, because when I was reading this description that is outside, and then somehow this universe is when Mahavishnu exhales. So what I was thinking, that first he has to inhale, like swallow this universe is already created, and then inhale them. But it was my speculation. I understood in this way.
How's that?
So first, it must be like first inhaling of Mahavishnu, and
yes.
Then, so because it looks like this universe is there outside of his body, so first he must have inhaled them, and then this description creates. But no description is there in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Okay.
Yeah. Just how I understood it when I was reading this.
Yes.
Maybe it's wrong.
That's, so he exhales, but he's only exhaling what he already inhaled, which means that material elements still reside in Prakriti. They come from her, but somehow he sucks them in, he inhales them, and then exhales them again. But they're actually coming from Prakriti, who is eternal. She may be inside him or outside him, but she is an eternal entity, and all the material ingredients do come from her. Jagrata Krishna. We can't hear without the microphone.
But the Prakriti, she has no right to stay in the causal ocean, Karana ocean. She stays outside.
She's staying outside the causal ocean?
Yeah, she cannot enter.
Does that make a difference? And where is that actually said? That she's outside the causal ocean? Can you write that down? Just write down the verse number. Okay, let's take that into account too.
Is that means that now when Mahavishnu inhales, the universes are also coming out, Prakriti is also coming out?
When he exhales.
Exhales.
Well, maybe.
And then while inhaling, it is goes through Prakriti something? Some kind of.
Well, Prakriti, I don't know. Prakriti, thing is, two things are going on. Three things are going on. Four things are going on. Four now. He's breathing in and out. He's opening his eyes and looking. He's perspiring. And also we have a description that there's this rays of light coming off of his body. And they're not necessarily all happening simultaneously. There may be a sequence that first he glances and then he breathes, or vice versa. You know, they're not all simultaneously necessarily. And what's coming out of which of those four activities, that has to be sorted out. And also whether they're in a sequence or whether they're all happening at the same time. So I can't say. I mean, Prakriti, seems like we have a statement that Prakriti goes inside Mahavishnu. In some sense, she merges back into Mahavishnu. It can't be that she goes out of existence and just dissolves, because she's supposed to be eternal. So she gets inside Mahavishnu somehow, but how she comes out again, that I don't see the information. I can't presume. I don't know. Whether she comes out in the breathing, or whether she just you know, walks out before that. I don't know. Yeah.
Isn't it that it's, you said it's, she's coming through the glass, no?
No, he glances at Prakriti. She's already outside and he looks at her. The glance is his glance at Prakriti. She's sitting out there, if not in the causal ocean, then right outside the causal ocean. And she's sitting on her tiger and he looks at her. So she's not coming out in the glance, the glance is directed at her. She's already outside. That's what makes it more complicated. Somehow she already got out there before he glances. Maybe he was breathing first, and then while he's breathing in his sleep, and then he opens his eyes, could be that sequence. And she came out in the breath, maybe.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Prakriti is coming in, you know, being there.
What, take the microphone? Here. Yes? Not working, okay, go ahead. Go ahead. It's a neuter name. Pradhanam. Right? Pradhana. I'm sorry, Pradhana masculine or neuter? Okay, we don't know. Okay, it's masculine. Grammatically masculine, but it's a thing.
Yeah.
And why is Prakriti is female? Well, okay, in one sense it's just a grammatical quirk. You can have, the grammatical gender doesn't always correspond with the natural gender. Wife, bharya, is a feminine noun. But kalatram is a neuter noun and also means wife. Dharaha is masculine plural, but it also means wife. The other thing is that material nature has two aspects. There's the presiding deity, but there's also the inert energy that she presides over. And that's neuter. The energy itself is inert. So pradhana maybe the word points more to the energy rather than the presiding deity. But it also refers to her. And she is definitely her, you know, energy, shakti, female. I don't know why that's chosen as the name. Pradhana means principle. It's the principle, primary, you know, first element of creation. But I'm just speculating. There may be some explanation somewhere why it's called Pradhana. I'm sure there's some explanation. Yes? Is there a reason why the microphone's not working? Is it the batteries?
No,
okay, maybe later you can look into it. Alright, maybe later you can look into that. After class, you can look into it. Yes? And the other is the nimitta karana, active. So, but even the supplier of the ingredients is also a person. Is also female. She has two female aspects, and then she also presides over inert energy. And she, as a person, she has two different aspects. The active agent of creation and the supplier of the ingredients. Okay. If we start now, we can move into the next paragraph. Okay, so the Vedas come. When it's time for Mahavishnu to wake up and recreate the universe, they come to wake him up. That's where we're left. And Jiva Goswami goes out of his way to say this is not the Purusha, this is Bhagavan that they're approaching. Now, we're resorting to a literary device called Art Antaranyasa in the next verse. The next verse of that chapter of the 10th canto gives an example about something that's, strictly speaking, irrelevant. The question, this topic is about the Vedas describing the absolute truth. We're telling a story, and now we're diverging into an example about somebody coming up and waking up a king in the morning, which technically has nothing to do with it. But that example helps explain the situation. Purva Padyarte Drishtantaha. An analogy is offered to illustrate the meaning of the first of these verses. The first verse was about the Vedas waking up Mahavishnu.
Yata Shayanam Samrajam Vandinas Tatparakramaihi Pratyushe Bhyetya Sushlokayur Bodayantyanu Jivinaha.
It looks like the translation's not complete. They awaken him just as the poets serving a king approach him at dawn and awaken him by reciting his heroic deeds. I guess that's complete. Okay. All right. Now, what enlightenment do we derive from that? Let's see what Jiva Goswami says about that verse. Tasya samraja parakramo yatra tire natu nirvisheshatva vyanjakai shobanaik shlokai. So they wake him up with shlokas that are in which shlokas there's description of that king's prowess, his deeds, parakrama. Not beautiful shlokas, not shlokas nirvisheshatva vyanjaka, which talk about formlessness. It's the Vedas who come and wake up the Supreme Lord, Mahavishnu. It's not that they come and say, you know, you're formless, you're eternal, you have no qualities, you don't do anything. They don't come and talk like that. They wake him, the Vedas wake up Mahavishnu, as servants wake a sleeping emperor with beautiful verses, in which the emperor's prowess is described, not which describe him as devoid of qualities. They would get fired, or worse, if they came and woke up the king telling him, you have no qualities. Yata iti asyayam abhiprayaha. Now, what this actually means to say. It's a simple statement, but what is actually behind that statement? Yata ratrau samarat mahishibi kridanapi bahikaryam parityajyantar grihadau stitatvat Tajanai Shayana Ev Ochiate. Just as, this means to say that just as at night a king is said to have gone to sleep, even though he is enjoying with his queens. But everybody says he's gone to sleep, he's gone into his quarters. Because why do they say that? Because he has put aside his external business and is remaining in his private quarters. So we say Mahavishnu is sleeping, and now he has to be woken up. But that's just what it looks like to outsiders. He's not dealing with the material world. He's gone back into his spiritual realm. So we say he's asleep. Vandibhish cha tat prabhava maya shloka krita prabodhana bhangya stuyate. And just as the king is praised by reciters in the style of waking him with verses full of descriptions of his prowess. I mean, at 5 o'clock in the morning, it's the ritual that the Vandis come and wake up the king. Maybe he already got up, maybe he woke up at 3 o'clock, but still the ritual has to be performed. Come and wake him up, or recite the prayers. Maybe it's not required, but anyway, they do it. Vandibhish tatayam bhagavan tadanim jagat kari akrita drishtir nigudam nijadamni nijaparikarayar kridan api. Okay. So similarly, he, the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, is not casting his glance on the business of the material world, even while privately enjoying with his own associates in his own abode. So here's some insight. It is the Supreme Lord. It's the Lord of Vaikuntha, because we think he's sleeping. We think it's Mahavishnu, fast asleep, doing nothing. Actually, he's experiencing within himself his life in Vaikuntha. He's not actually asleep. He just is pretending to be asleep, and he's actually enjoying Atmana Ramaya Reme Chaktakalam. He's put aside material time and all its effects, but inside himself, he's enjoying with his pleasure potency. So it is Bhagavan. The Purusha is the role he takes in the material world, and that's what everybody on the outside sees. And they think, oh, now the Purusha is asleep. Just like some people complain, you know, don't have loud kirtans during the Chaturmasya because Vishnu is sleeping. You don't want to wake him up. That's misunderstanding, thinking that he's actually asleep. And they're called Anujivina in the verse. What does Anujivi mean? What does the verb Anujiv mean? Dependent, yeah, to be a dependent, to be dependent on somebody, to live after someone, or to be dependent on someone. Anujivin, is someone who is dependent. That's the use of the in suffix, e suffix, not to mean possessing something, but doing something. Somebody who does the act of being dependent is an anujivi. Anujivina is the plural form. Anujivinaha ityanena te yata tat tanmarma gyas tatata apiti suchitam. The word anujivinaha, faithful followers, indicates that as reciters know a king's heart, so the Shrutis know his. Okay, we're actually at the bottom of the file. Let me just read the commentary, it's only one short paragraph. The Vedas, or more properly speaking, the sages of each of the Vedas, have approached the Supreme Lord to wake him up for the new day of creation. Hopefully, the prayers they are going to offer him are not going to be too impersonal. It would not be much inspiration for him to get up from his blissful sleep in which he consorts with his loving servants only to be told that he has no form, qualities, or activities. Might as well go back to sleep then. Okay, let's discuss it. Any comments? Yes.
Who are the personified Vedas? I remember one description that some sages on the Sitkaloka or somewhere around.
These are specific sages. These are Vedic rishis. This is my understanding. Maybe I'm wrong, but the way I understand it, and I'm saying it here, is that there are rishis. In the published editions of the Vedas, you can argue maybe that wasn't there originally, but in the Vedas as we have them, each Veda is assigned a rishi. That rishi is the original speaker of that Veda. The Vedas and every verse in them are eternal, but they're not always manifest in any universe at any particular time. Periodically, the Vedas have to be remembered, recovered, because they're forgotten. The rishis, the original rishis, are the proper meaning of the word rishi is one who can receive Vedas in his meditation. Lost Vedas, he can get them back from the spiritual, from the Akash and the spiritual world by meditating. So those who can receive Vedas and give them back to the human people, they're called rishis. And those rishis, in any cycle of history, whoever receives a Veda, he gets the credit. And in the Vedas, his name is given, that he's the rishi of this mantra or this sukta. There are other kinds of rishis who don't have that power, but they learn the Vedas and they memorize them. Those are called Shrutarshis, rishis by the power of hearing rather than on the power of meditation, of secondary rishis. But the primary rishis are able to do this, sit down and meditate and receive mantras. Now we got these Vedas there with, maybe in Vaikuntha, waking up Narayan. Where they came from, who they are, I can't tell you.
Yeah. Because we can see that Lord Brahma, Dhani Brahma, Hridayati Kavaya, that he received this Vedas without the medium of the traditions.
He's the first rishi in the material world, yeah. But there may be rishis in the spiritual world, too. Yeah, the primary rishis are Brahma's sons, but he's the first. I don't think there's any mantras, any hymns of the Rig Veda that are ascribed to Lord Brahma. And the explanation usually given is that Brahma is not a spiritual master for the human race. He deals with the rishis and demigods. And Narada, his son, and his other sons, they communicate to the human beings.
Maybe this is there must be a level of Brahma Loka. Brahma, Lord Brahma and his associated, they must be on this level that they can see Vedic mantras.
Brahma opens his mouth and the Vedas come out. He opens up his four mouths and all the Vedas come out. So you can give credit to Brahma for all the Vedas. The only thing is, they weren't recorded. Nobody was there with a tape recorder. So they have to be retransmitted down on the earth or on lower planets by other rishis. They have to be rediscovered.
Then question arises, okay, we have Mahavishnu who is lying on the cause of ocean and we have no material universes, no Maya at all, no Brahma Loka, no Brahma. So where are these rishis
where they come from? I don't know.
When they come from,
I mean, you see pictures of Mahavishnu lying down, or when Krishna and Balaram, when they took their bath at Kunda, the border of Vrindavan, Akura saw them as Anantasheshan and Mahavishnu, surrounded by all the sages and demigods who are offering them prayers. You get that picture very often. Mahavishnu is lying there, and Narada Muni and all the demigods are there, glorifying them. So where does this entourage come from? Are they shipped in from all their own material planets, or are there some other people from the spiritual world? I don't know. Especially if we have Narayan in the spiritual world, well, we know that Narada Muni, the same Narada Muni, goes to Vaikuntha. He spends, his time there. It's the same Narada Muni. The same Lord Shiva is in Vaikuntha. But other demigods, other sages, are they the same ones or are there somebody else when they appear in Vaikuntha? I don't know. Yes?
You know, maybe just my speculation, maybe because all material creation, all living entity, they enter the body of Mahavishnu. So maybe from within the Mahavishnu, they wake him up. You know.
Okay, so they have to get up before the creation. They don't come out in a glance. They're woken up. No, but they're supposed to come out in a glance and be impregnated. It's not that they have to come and stand around Mahavishnu before the glance and then go back to sleep and come out again. Okay, see, we are only guessing because we still haven't figured out where this is happening. Is this happening in the causal ocean or is this happening in Vaikuntha? We still haven't pinned that down.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you who this entourage is because I'm not even sure where we are. I don't even know the location.
Yeah, because it's easy to understand if it's going on Vaikuntha. We know that in the spiritual world, everything is spiritual, like we have Nayana Mana Manjari, the glance of Shrimati Radharani and Krishna is like a personification of this glance and so on and so on.
Well,
so
the personified Vedas are there.
Yeah.
We're just talking about Vedas. We're not talking about all the demigods and sages, everybody coming. It's just the Vedas personified. They're coming to wake up Mahavishnu, or whoever it is, Narayan. And we know that the Vedas personified, or at least the four Vedas, are there in Vaikuntha. That we're told in various Puranas.
Can it be, for example, because we know that spiritual personalities like Narada Muni, he can travel over spiritual material world. So the Vedas from the spiritual world, they especially descends to this place where Mahavishnu is there, is lying down, and they wake him up by the prayers.
Well, we have to distinguish. You're talking about the Vedas, the actual sound of the Vedas, or the sages. They're two different things. And here we seem to be saying, I'm saying, and I think it's said in the commentaries, Jiva Goswami says, that who it is the sages who are in charge of the Vedas. They're offering the prayers. So it's not hard to explain or to understand that the Vedas exist in Vaikuntha and also they can be in the material. But now we're talking about these people, these sages, who take charge of each of the different parts of the Vedas. How they get around spiritual world, material world, that's more complicated. You have, you know, a Bhrigu Muni. You have one of them in each universe. They're all different people. You have a different Lord Brahma in each universe. So if you have Lord Brahma there in Vaikuntha, which Lord Brahma is it? You know, this prototype Brahma is there in Vaikuntha, or the Chandra or Indra in Vaikuntha. Who is he? I'm not sure. Because you have millions of other Indras and Chandras and Bhrigu Munis in each of the universes. It gets complicated to explain, if we're talking about this going on in Vaikuntha, who this entourage is. Who are these people?
Maybe if it's personified Vedas from the spiritual world, they can descend to this place, then they can wake him up. Like original sages, which represent Vedas in the spiritual world, they descend to the place.
The Vedas themselves, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, the Vedas themselves are spiritual, so they're people. Mm-hmm. Okay, in the spiritual world, the Vedas themselves don't need someone else representing them. Okay, that makes sense. I'm not. Yeah, I don't want to officially proclaim that, but it makes sense.
Yesterday's statement, this Charukrishna's statement that Mahavishnu may go back into Sankarsana, then it looks like everything is going on in Vaikuntha. Then it's even...
No, but everything material goes into Mahavishnu, but it becomes dormant. It's inactive. It's not like all the material activities go on in Vaikuntha.
No. But
if like Bhrigu Muni, the sage, and all the sages in the material world, have to go back into Mahavishnu and sleep, then they're not going to be able to get up and offer prayers. They're going to be dormant.
Yes. But like you said, that's why I'm saying that looks like it's going in a place where these personalities exist. So it looks
okay.
Like
if it's happening in the material realm, then it's a lot easier to deal with. Even there is a complication. You have a different set of demigods and sages in each separate universe. You have one Mahatattva and one Pradhan for the whole creation. And originally, in the Mahatattva, there are 10 presiding deities, Brahma and 10 deities, who take charge of the Mahatattva, before the universes, separate universes manifest. So who's this original Brahma? And who's this original Indra and Surya? That later, are replaced by a different Brahma, a different Surya, and a different Indra in each universe. That I can't say. What's the status of the prototype demigods who are present in the Mahatattva? So, okay, maybe this is happening in the Mahatattva, or going one step back in the Pradhan, causal ocean. Still, who are these people offering the prayers? It's still complicated to answer. Even if it's in the material realm. When I was helping Tamal Krishnaraj in 1981 do this research for his book, this is where we got stuck. On this question of who are the prototype demigods who are sitting in the Pradhan, in Mahatattva. We didn't get an answer to that. Are they jivas? Or are they some special kind of Shakti? What are they? We don't know. Okay, we're 10 minutes over time. So we finished the file at least, and we'll continue with start the next file tomorrow. Okay, thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Часто понимаешь, как приватно, да, постоянно вещи делаются. Ты не долго объясни, честно слово, не одна вещь. Почему ты хочешь сидеть, если не можешь, например, здесь это нужно делать, тебе нужно. Например, что плохого, то есть. Для меня, например, сколько тебе сил хватает, например, по пути в голову, или это или это чисто дело настроения твоего, чтобы даже если даже с публикой даже шею не поворачивать, чтобы ему было легче было. Или... Нет, честное слово, я хочу понять, я не буду прицепливаться к тому настроению.